This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you from Chicago, USA. With your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. You hear so much doom and gloom about the end of net neutrality, but what is fact and what is pure fiction? I decided to go straight to the source for the truth. Commissioner of the FCC, Brendan Carr, is going to join me to separate facts from fiction. Thanks for joining me, Commissioner.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Tell me, how long have you been a commissioner?
So I joined the agency about a year ago as a commissioner, but I started at the FCC as a staffer back in 2012. And then before moving into this job as a commissioner, I served as general counsel of the agency.
You know all about net neutrality then, right?
Yeah, we've lived through a couple rounds of it so far.
So what exactly is net neutrality?
Well, it's an interesting question. A lot of different people put a lot of different views into what net neutrality means. At bottom, the way I view it is that Americans are passionate about the free and open internet. They want to go to the websites they want to go to. They don't want to get blocked. They don't want to get throttled. And they don't want to be at the whims of their internet provider. And that concept over the years has been abided by and consumers have benefited from since well before the 2015 decision that the FCC adopted to put Title II in place for the first time.
Now, how was it determined that it should end?
The 2015 decision that the FCC adopted applied what we call Title II, this relatively big set of regulations to the internet for the first time. We obviously had a free and open internet before that 2015 decision. And then we, about a year ago or so, we opened up a new rulemaking to take another look at whether Title II is the right regulatory approach for the internet and decided that definitionally it's what we call in telecom world a Title I information service, not a Title II telecom service.
That was a lot of jargon, and I'm not going to lie. A lot of it went over my head. So Title II is what you guys are determining that it wasn't good enough for us, right?
So, again, there's two sort of separate issues here. One is a legal question, and one is a policy question. As a legal matter, we have to decide at the commission, is internet access what we call a Title II under the Communications Act, a Title II communication service, or instead, definitionally, is it a Title I information service? And there's really even more wonky, detailed definitions that decide whether a service, broadband service, is Title II or Title I. And when you make that definitional cut, the FCC has a lot more authority and jurisdiction over things that are Title II services. So after the FCC in 2015 decided that the internet is a Title II service, it used that legal determination to then impose a set of bright line net neutrality rules. The reality is there's not a lot of differences. There's actually a lot of common ground about those basic rules of the road, sort of net neutrality principles or rules. The big debate we had at the FCC, at least, was whether Title II or Title I is the right legal justification. Again, what we confronted was really a different question than should there be net neutrality rules, should there not be net neutrality rules. The question we confronted as an original matter was, is this a Title I or Title II service?
So it sounds like semantics, really. Does it fall this way on the line or that side of the line?
To some extent, but it has consequences. So once we decided that it couldn't be, in our view, a Title II service and a Title I service, those net neutrality rules that the commission had hung off of the Title II classification also went away because we didn't have the legal authority, we found, to impose those types of rules through Title I. Now, that said, again, I have no opposition to basic rules of the road and, in fact, would welcome Congress stepping in with a specific decision to put those or similar net neutrality rules back in place.
Why are people afraid of net neutrality ending, though?
People are pretty fired up about it. I agree with you on that. And I think it goes back to where we started, which is that people believe that the end of Title II and the end of Title II rules has removed all legal constraints on their broadband provider and that their internet experience is now going to be completely subject to the whims of an ISP, that they're now for the first time going to be free to block or throttle or discriminate. And it's not true in two respects. One, the FCC's Title II rules, as the Court of Appeals found, expressly allowed broadband providers to engage in blocking and discrimination, provided that they disclose that they were doing it. So there's really no change in the law with respect to their ability to do it. But second, there actually is now some strong protections that are being put in place. When something's classified as a Title II service, that prevents the Federal Trade Commission, which is the nation's premier consumer protection agency, from having any jurisdiction or authority. So now broadband providers, for the first time since 2015, are subject to the Federal Trade Commission's jurisdiction again, and they can take action that gets at a lot of that conduct that people are worried about when they talk about net neutrality. You do, in some ways, have two very different views that the public is seeing of this decision. One that's characterizing it as sort of the end of the internet, and ISPs are free for the first time to engage in this sort of conduct. And you have a different view of the legal implications of our decision, and I think that's why you see people pretty fired up.
The throttling, I know that more than anyone. When it comes to video games, I've been throttled where you'll get knocked off. You've been playing for so long that they'll be like, oh, you took too much, you know, data, enough with you. Or you're watching too many movies streaming. They'll throttle that way. So yeah, I've always wondered, it's not like it's anything different. If anything, wouldn't it get kind of better? Wouldn't there be more competition now?
That's my view. Not everybody agrees with that, to be sure, but that's certainly my view, and here's why. When you travel around the country, there are literally thousands of smaller, essentially mom-and-pop broadband providers that are trying to compete with the big-name providers that you've heard about, trying to compete with AT&T, Verizon, Comcast. That Title II regulatory classification, we found, was increasing the costs, the regulatory costs, for those providers to compete and to be in business. So my view generally is let's remove unnecessary regulatory costs and make it easier for those small providers to either become the first broadband option in a community or the first competitive broadband option in the community. But again, reasonable minds, I think, can look at Title I and Title II and reach different conclusions. But I'm very confident that by returning to Title I, consumers are going to be protected, and we are going to see continued investment and deployment in the broadband space.
Now, one of the rumors I heard, and this is the one that kind of got me a little bit unnerved, was that internet service providers may now have the right to sell our search history and internet habits. Is that true, or is that just a rumor?
Well, we heard this about a year ago in the context of the privacy debate. If you'll remember, people said that the decision there was freeing ISPs to sell consumers' web browsing history. And we now know, we were saying at the time as well, that that's not true and that that didn't take place.
Okay, good, good. Because nobody wants to see all the cat videos I'd be looking at.
Exactly right.
Now, how soon will we see the effects of the end of the net neutrality?
You're seeing it right now. Welcome
really?
To the Armageddon. So the decision to repeal the old Title II rules, the Obama-era rules, was made in December of last year. And as an administrative matter, when you make a decision like that, there's a lag time between when it goes into effect. So it actually went into effect at the beginning of last week. And so despite a lot of this doomsday predictions that we saw in the lead up to it, obviously from my perspective, everyone's internet service is continuing. And that's what we're going to expect. Again, this is not moving to a world in which we've removed all legal restraints on broadband providers. There still are strong consumer protections in place. We're going to have a free and open internet. It's the same legal classification that we had during the first 6 years of the Obama administration and for many years before that.
I'm a little curious. Will internet companies have to admit that they throttle? Because usually that's in very fine print, like, oh, after 500 gigabytes, we reserve the right to throttle your internet. Will they have to say that now?
Yes. So what we did when we reversed the 2015 decision, we actually put in place a new, what we call transparency rule, that requires your broadband provider to offer really detailed and clear descriptions of the practices that they would engage in. And if they were to violate those disclosures, then the Federal Trade Commission is empowered to step in and take action.
What happens if they decide, hey, okay, we're not going to throttle, you know, you're going to get unlimited data, just like we always said we were going to give you. We're only going to do this if you pay $300 a month. Will the FCC jump in saying, hey, that's way too much, that's too high in price?
So two things there. One, with the 2015 decision, and this is again where there's a lot of confusion, that 2015 Obama-era decision expressly said that it involved no rate regulation. So there was no limit on them charging you $300 back then. So reversing the 2015 decision doesn't change the law at all with respect to pricing or rates that consumers are charged. What I think is going to happen, though, is that by reducing the regulatory cost of competition, We're going to continue to see providers entering this space and competing, and that conduct is going to help keep prices down.
This is where I get a little bit confused at. You hear Google, you know, Facebook, Amazon, all these big internet companies are saying, hey, we're against net neutrality. And, you know, why? If it doesn't seem like it's a bad thing, so why are they touting that, hey, we, you know, net neutrality, we need it?
So a lot of the big companies you mentioned, Facebook, Google, have been very vocal in their support of what they call of net neutrality. But again, I would go back to the distinction we had at the commission. The question we confronted was whether it's Title II or Title I. The separate question is, should there be net neutrality rules? And I think almost everyone out there agrees that there should be some basic rules of the road. And that's why I would support Congress stepping in and passing, you know, I would think on a bipartisan basis, some basic rules of the road that we can all get behind. But Title II, in my view, is not the right path forward. I don't think we had a good experience with it during the two or so years that it was in place. And so I think, again, people talk about net neutrality, but the decision that we had was about Title II versus Title I.
So do you think as of right now, it's almost like the Wild West of the Internet? There's no rules, really? It's just everybody having fun at this point?
No, not at all. With respect to the law that applies to broadband providers, there continue to be legal constraints, including antitrust law and the Federal Trade Commission's authority, that can be used if a broadband provider engages in a lot of this conduct that people are concerned about when they talk about net neutrality. So we did not go into some Mad Max or Wild West version of the Internet. There's still legal constraints on people's broadband providers. And that's one thing that we heard loud and clear, is that, you know, people didn't want to be left to the whims of their providers, and that's not the world that we moved into.
Man, I can sometimes feel like the whole discussion of net neutrality was somebody made a mountain out of an anthill. Was that the case?
I think in many ways that is the case. When you get outside of D.C., and I've spent a lot of time outside of D.C. in this job, people want better, faster, cheaper options for broadband. And there's a lot of work that we're doing, both, you know, moving back to Title I, but even apart from that, a lot of work we're doing on broadband infrastructure efforts is going to help to deliver on that as opposed to moving back to this Title II framework.
Well, Commissioner Carr, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
So one place is on Twitter, at Brendan Carr FCC, and that links to my website and bio and more information about the work we're doing at the FCC.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Head to WGNradio.com for exclusive content by Mason. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne, that's all one word, and don't forget to share the show with your friends.